The Board of Immigration Appeals in this case abused its discretion in affirming the judge's decision in a variety of ways. Among other issues, they found that Mr. Baca had waived his right to argue his claims because he had not exhausted them at the immigration court level. One of those claims was the claim regarding his one-year eligibility. Mr. Baca clearly indicated in his own record that he had been a victim of an extraordinary circumstance that absolutely would have qualified as an exception. He received a gunshot wound to the face 7 months after his 18th birthday. It was a disability that absolutely would have, had the judge actually elicited that testimony, constituted an exception to the one-year bar. In this case, immigration judge Munoz did not elicit required testimony from Mr. Baca to indicate that he did meet the exception. She simply denied that he met the exception and moved on without further comment. Mr. Baca's requirement of hospitalization, therapy, and the permanent loss of his sight all should have been factored in to deciding whether he actually did meet the exception, and he did. The board cannot double down on this lack of affirmative duty by the judge and call it good, expecting that simply because the litigant in the case was pro se and unsophisticated, that he doesn't get the opportunity to have the claim heard as it should have been.
Counsel, I'm going to interrupt you. I have a few questions for you. My first question is, why wasn't his lack of competency brought up in his first petition? In his first motion to reopen the case?
From what I've been able to see of the record, his mental health issues were brought up. Now, I'm not entirely sure why it wasn't specifically labeled as a need for an MAM hearing, but I do see in the record that it was brought up that he was having mental health issues.
Can you point to me in the record where it says that?
It says it in the original 2017 brief. The original 2017 brief gave, in the petition for review, mental health issues as one of the bases for that.
And are we to read, or was the IJ to read mental health issues as equivalent to incompetency?
Well, on top of that, yes, she should have read mental health issues as an issue for competency because he did make those known. On top of that, Mr. Baca had suffered a traumatic brain injury, which certainly would have been cause for further examination. He also stated in the record multiple times that he didn't understand or he was confused. He would forget basic details of his life. All of these things should have been indications that competency needed to be adjudicated.
Give me examples of what sort of basic information he forgot. The grandfather issue?
The grandfather issue is a particular concern, yes. There's some confusion in his statements in the record as to whether he understood which uncle was making the statements, largely because he didn't seem to remember how that contact was established between himself and the uncle. He also seemed to not totally understand the difference between when his grandfather died and which grandfather was being talked about. He even gets confused about his grandmother's at some point during that same set of questioning.
Doesn't he actually say that he doesn't know, understand what's going on?
He does. He does. He actually says, and I think this is administrative record 3937, where he says, I don't understand. I don't know. I can't see what's on the application. He brings it up. And I apologize, that is, yes, that's 3937.
I have questions for you regarding exhaustion. The IJ's determination that Mr. Baca Hernandez untimely filed his asylum application, was that somehow, brought up to the BIA?
So Mr. Baca himself was the one who filed the BIA appeal, and it doesn't appear that he was aware that there was the ability to exhaust that claim with the BIA. Again, unsophisticated litigant, it doesn't appear that he has any idea that there was an exception that he could have been granted at any time.
What are we to do with that, though? I mean, would we say that it's exhausted? Do we give him a pass? We usually, I mean, as the Court of Appeal, we don't look at things in the first instance if they haven't been exhausted. Do we just remand? What would you like us to do in that regard?
In that regard, I think remand is the solution, because it's something that should have been. It was obvious at the time that he had an exception because of the record that was provided. It should have been adjudicated. It was not adjudicated. I believe the only way to correct that error is to remand.
So what do we do with the fact that there was indicia of incompetency? That was not delved into by the IJ at all at the hearing.
It was not. And I believe, again, that the only solution for that is remand.
But was it raised before the BIA? I think it was, because the BIA says we know there's mental health issues, but we don't think that they reject that argument. They say we don't think that impeded the record.
They reject the argument in the motion to reopen and terminate. They didn't, however, reject it in the substantive appeal filed by Mr. Baca, because that's not where it was raised. Okay. It was raised in the motion to reopen because it had not previously been seen, and it appeared that there was no real adjudication of whether he did have that incompetency.
The medical records since he's been detained show lots of problems, mental problems that he has right now, right?
They do. In the over 3,000 pages of medical records, there are multiple instances, sometimes nearly daily, where they indicate that Mr. Baca has major depressive disorder, has been experiencing issues with selective mutism, and has been having issues with overall general depression. There are medical records from the initial hospitalization where it is noted that Mr. Baca does have a traumatic brain injury. And that would be Administrative Record 3732, where it is stated as part of the discharge paperwork that there's a traumatic brain injury. That should have been evaluated at the least by the board, and it should have been evaluated by the court in the first instance. It's hard to say with a person with a traumatic brain injury whether or not there is an issue of competency without actually adjudicating it. But there is a reason to adjudicate, because traumatic brain injury is an injury to the brain.
So I had a question. If we play this out, this is more just so I understand the process here. Let's say we were to agree with you that this case needs a second look. Let's say he is found to be incompetent. Then would he remain in immigration detention? Like, I'm just trying to understand what the end game is here.
So Mr. Baca is no longer detained.
Okay.
He was released as part of a class action civil rights lawsuit. And that was a few years ago. But if we play this all the way through and he's determined to be incompetent, I think safeguards could reasonably be placed to further adjudicate his case. Or the case could be held at administrative closure until such time as he can be rehabilitated, if that's possible.
But he's not, so this is not like in the criminal context where they would try to medicate him and try to get him competent. I take it here, what would be the procedure?
Here, the procedure may be, because he's having issues with memory loss, the procedure may be to have other witnesses testify. It may be to have expert witnesses testify as to the memory loss, and we may need to update country conditions to account for that traumatic brain injury and how it would affect his particular social group.
So my last question is, and I know you want to save time for rebuttal, but So he could still, I mean, conceivably, I'm not asking you to say this is what should happen. But I'm just saying conceivably, he still could be removed. Just the procedurally how we would go forward in the case would be different.
That is a possibility. Ultimately, I can't exactly say what an immigration judge might find in that moment. But at the very least, he's entitled to the full and fair hearing that addresses his competency issues and that addresses his actual particular social groups, because those weren't really elicited by the immigration judge either. So there were several failings on that part that indicated that we really, as a court system, should have done a better job of completing this record and really giving him the due process he deserved.
Right. And I'm trying to compare it to, I'm more familiar, candidly, with the criminal side on competency. And that's where the guy cannot be adjudicated if he's incompetent. There's a whole procedure. You try to get them competent. Sounds like here it's different. Okay. That was just that. That was my question. I know you wanted to save time.
It is absolutely different, Your Honor. The competency standard in immigration is somewhat lower. However, if there is an indication that by using other witnesses, that by using documentary testimony, and that by giving expert witness testimony, we can provide adequate safeguards to adjudicate the case, we can go forward.
All right. Thank you.
I know you want to save time, but I do have another question. Since you brought up the PSG, one of the PSGs he's claiming is based on his blindness, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So point to me where he stated that in his asylum application.
It is on page 5 of his asylum application where he says, I recently became blind and am afraid. He does indicate it in the report. I believe that that's administrative record 3948 that he does. And then he also does say that he is blind and is an understanding in the transcripts.
So, I mean, maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought it was that he was having a hard time even finding his way in the United States. He was like, how am I going to do it in Mexico where I'm blind? You know what I mean?
He absolutely does indicate that. He needs a walking stick to even get around. So he would be very visibly blind to others.
Okay. And is that, I guess, are you saying that because that adds to his fear that others would notice that he's blind, or?
I do believe that it adds to his fear because since he needs help, he's very reliant on others for the most basic of life tasks. It's incredibly difficult for him not to be obviously blind and not to be potentially persecuted on that basis.
And then I had a final question. There was two separate motions filed to reopen with the BIA, and it's my understanding that he was represented by counsel on both, correct?
That is my understanding.
Okay. Were you the counsel that was representing him?
No, Your Honor.
Oh, okay. I was just curious, and maybe you don't have an answer to this, but on the first motion, he moved to reopen to apply for a U visa because of that injury to the face, but he didn't say anything there about his incompetency. I feel like he's trying to get two bites at the apple. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
It may well be, and this is purely speculation, but it may well be that because the U visa was pending, there was a targeted and specific rationale behind that original motion to reopen, rather than a global response to everything that was going on.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you've got a minute, so let's hear from
the rest of my time.
All right, thank you.
May it please the court, Ted Durant. Can you hear me, Your Honor?
Yes,
all good. Very good. Ted Durant for the United States. I do want to address some of counsel's arguments before I get into the meat of my presentation, and is that the lion's share of what she argued is either not exhausted or it's not before, it hasn't been before the board. But if you want to talk about competency, you look at this case in a nutshell. Petitioner was shot in 2014. He graduated high school, returned 18 in 2014. He was shot in January of 2015. He graduates from high school in June of 2015. Later that summer, he is arrested for robbery, some kind of strong arm robbery, and he pleads guilty to robbery in November of 2015, right before his removal proceedings start. So he understands a criminal case. He understands pleading guilty and the sort of circumstances of going on probation. During the removal hearing, he understood everything. He was quite clear. He understood the nature of the proceedings. He filed his own.
Tell me, were you there?
Can you hear me?
I'm just wondering if you were there at the removal proceedings.
Was I there?
Yes.
I read the record, Your Honor.
You're taking this from the transcript.
I read the entire transcript, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I read the entire transcript.
You're kind of testifying that he was competent during the hearing, but I mean, we all have read the transcript.
Well, what I'm saying is there's no indicia of incompetency. And after his hearing, as the court is aware, he filed a first motion to reopen seeking a U visa. Nothing about incompetency. He's represented by counsel. In fact, in that U visa, there's a declaration by petitioner on page 3725 of the record and 3792 that he would competently testify as to the shooting that happened to him in January of 2015, his recovery, and how it's affecting him. So he's certainly signing right there through counsel that he would competently testify as to those things. And before the immigration judge, there was no indicia of incompetency. In fact, he signed his asylum application in front of the immigration judge during the hearing, and there's no evidence that he's having any trouble doing that. And then he tells his story, and it's fearing crime and gangs in Mexico. He hadn't been there since 1998. He testified to that quite clearly. But again, there is no asylum claim. There is no, I mean, it's nothing there. He fills general crimes and conditions. He never mentions his blindness. The judge gives him two opportunities to say, do you fear anything else? Do you fear anything else? He says no and no. And importantly, after this decision, when counsel files that first motion to reopen, nothing. Nothing about his competency. Nothing about, hey, you missed this, you missed that. He should have been able to bring in these documents. It was strictly U visa. And then years after the fact, he files a second motion to reopen with thousands of pages of medical documents, all after the removal hearing. Now, he may have some kind of condition now, but he was clearly competent there was no indicia of incompetency during his removal hearing. And so that's the motion to reopen. But with respect to the first hearing, the board found that he had not exhausted the untimeliness issue. That's the issue, not whether he had extraordinary circumstances. That wasn't the issue. The board found that he failed to exhaust it. Petitioner never addressed that particular issue in his opening brief. It's all about, well, there are extraordinary circumstances. There's this, that, and the other thing. Again, not in the record. So in this case here, substantial evidence, obviously, it doesn't support his arguments in the first PFR. And the board clearly acted within its discretion when it denied his second motion to reopen based on the entire record. And they're looking at the entire thing, making an independent judgment.
So, counsel, I want to ask you regarding the timeliness issue with the one-year deadline to file the asylum application. So you mentioned, and I want to make sure I understood the timeline here, he was shot in January of 2015?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor.
And then he was still in high school at the time?
I believe he was in his senior year. He graduated that June.
Okay, so from January through June, he's in school, even though having been shot in the face?
He spent, I think, 45 days in the hospital. And obviously, yeah, he did graduate.
Okay. Why, though, isn't it he was shot in the face. He's blind. That's a pretty serious injury. And he's permanently blind. So why isn't that enough to excuse the 1 year filing deadline?
Well, it could be if he'd indicated that during the hearing when the judge brought it to his attention. It's like, hey, why didn't you file this asylum application? He said, I didn't know about it. Is that the only reason? I didn't know about it. He never says I was shot. I had traumatic brain injury. Nothing there. Interestingly enough, Your Honor, even after this shooting, he commits a robbery 9 months later, and then is found guilty. So, again, I don't know why he never brought it up. You would think he would. You would think it would be obvious during the hearing. I don't see how anyone is permanently blinded by, you know, by buckshot, which is very serious, and then commits, you know, a felony. I don't see how that happened. And I, you know, I wasn't there, but it's just an odd case in that regard.
But even as you just said, Mr. Durant, it's obvious. It's obvious he's blind. So didn't the IJ have some sort of obligation to say, sir, I'm seeing that you're having difficulty. Are you sure that you're able to move forward with this?
Actually, it's not obvious in the record. And I mean, he signs his application during the hearing. Like, okay, sign right there. Okay, I got it. There's no indication that he's not. Now, his vision may have deteriorated over time, but I don't know the state of it during the hearing. He had some kind of eye injury, but he never, until the end, he brings it up when, not in the case of incompetency, but when the judge starts to press him on whether or not he has any other additional evidence. He says, I'm new to this, but that's not respect to competency or anything, or the timeliness of his asylum application. That's just petitioner sort of scrambling, looking for answers.
So I want to read this quote to you. And that's when the IJ asked the petitioner if he would like to add anything further. And the petitioner responds, no, I can't. I don't know. I was missing a lot. I'm blind. I can't even. I'm new to this. Would that not trigger a competency for the IJ to have to start doing a competency, you know, examination?
No, your blindness does not necessarily equate to competence. And, you know, throughout the hearing, he's answering his questions clearly, whether or not he thought he had enough time. That's another issue.
What do you make, though? Ms. Garrett made the argument that he was getting a lot of facts wrong, basic facts. And that should have been a trigger or a nisha for the court to say, wait a second, this doesn't sound right. This person doesn't seem to be making sense.
At points, there was one aspect of his claim that he was found not credible, but for the most part, he was consistent. And it's not unheard of for non-citizens to have inconsistency between an asylum application and their testimony if it's untrue. But if throughout the course of the hearing, he's quite consistent on when he came here, the nature of the crime he committed, what he fears. But that doesn't necessarily equate to him not answering you know, questions clearly. And a lot of those points that counsel is making now were never really before the board. And so they couldn't answer that. The counsel did later bring them up in the opening brief. But,
you know, there was an example that, you know, he laughed once during the hearing.
Well, maybe he did laugh. He was discussing his criminal hearing before a judge. Maybe it was bravado, but he corrected his behavior right away. It's not like he was laughing through the entire hearing.
I mean, that shows he was locked in and corrected.
I mean, he's a young kid. Maybe he's, you know, being kind of punky. They can do that. I was like that too. And the judge actually, you know, corrected him. So
I don't see in the record that any indicia of incompetency. There's someone who understands the nature of the proceedings. He asked for asylum. It's obviously a weak asylum claim because he hasn't been back to Mexico since 1998. There's nothing there. And then his motion to reopen, it's a U visa where he specifically states that he would competently testify to X, Y, and Z. So he can't have it both ways. And in his second motion to reopen, the only evidence we have of mental illness is after the fact. So at that removal hearing, there was no indicia of incompetency at the hearing. I don't know what he's doing right now. I know he's out. He's no longer detained, but I can't testify to his mental state now. Does the court have any further questions at all, or I can close?
Does anyone have any further questions?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I was just asking if my colleagues had any further questions before I said you can close. And they don't, so you can close.
Thank you, Your Honor.
In conclusion, independently dispositive issues with regard to petitioner's asylum and withholding claims are unexhausted and forfeited. The lion's share of arguments in petitioner's opening briefs are unexhausted and never before the board. Therefore, the court cannot and should not consider them. Even if the court looked at the merits, they're supported by substantial evidence. and the board acted within its considerable discretion when it denied petitioner's second motion to reopen, claiming incompetence. The record does demonstrate that he was competent. And while this is a sympathetic case, petitioner has failed to meet his burden.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Ms. Garrett? Can't hear you again.
Your Honor?
Yes.
There we go. Okay, so I would like to address the statement that Mr. Baca signed his application during the hearing. 3951 in the record, there is no signature on that page. He did not sign at the hearing. There is an indication that he signed at some point prior, but there is no indication that he signed during the hearing. Further, Mr. Baca only corrected his inappropriate behavior when the judge asked for that correction. It wasn't something that he was able to self-correct. That's an indication, again, among others, that competency should have been evaluated at the time. The gunshot wound was obvious. It should have been evaluated at the time, and the fact that it wasn't means that the judge did not do her job. Because of that, we should be remanding to make sure that he gets the hearing that he deserved at the beginning.
May I ask you a question about the class that he's in? Was there
Yes, ma'am.
Any other relief for him in the context of that case?
So from what I understand of the class action lawsuit, it was related to the treatment of individuals with disabilities within the facility, that they weren't getting appropriate medical treatment, that they weren't getting appropriate mental health care, that they weren't getting the appropriate attention that would have been required for someone with their disabilities. And I believe that there were 14 plaintiffs that were named in the suit, and he was one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think I've exhausted my time.
All right. Thank you. The case of Baca Hernandez versus Blanche is submitted, and we will take a brief recess pending the second case on the docket.